This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards. Second hour here. Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky joining you in for Anthony Pepe tonight. This Washington-Boston playoff game is getting very chippy. Tom Wilson. Yes, that Tom Wilson just took it a Belgian penalty. So it's that kind of game. We're going to try to pry our eyes off that here, though, because we spent most of the first hour talking about the NHL playoffs, the scenarios, looking at the games that have already happened, what's ahead. I do want to get into the play-in tournament, especially you, Bobby. You cover the NBA. That's your league. It's really the first year of the play-in tournament. I know there was one last year, sure. But it was like...
This is on a grander scale.
Right. The whole playoffs was weird last year. Everything was weird last year, so it didn't feel like any... Everything felt different, so nothing felt different, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
This is a more traditional year, yet we still have this play-in. So, if you've missed it, it took me like halfway through the season to fully figure it out, because they didn't really announce it. It just sort of happened. So the 7, 8, 9, and 10 teams in each conference make this play-in. They're not playoff teams. Not yet. They can be, but they're not yet. It's not a playoff berth. Although... The Kings didn't make it at all, and I remember we talked a couple weeks ago about if it should count ending the Kings' playoff drought. That doesn't even matter. So it's not what you'd think. It's not 7, 10, 9, 8, etc. 7 and 8 will play each other. That winner goes in as the 7 seed. Even if 8 wins it, that winner goes into the playoffs as the 7 seed. The loser then plays the winner of 9, 10. That winner goes in as the 8 seed. So if you're 9 or 10, you need to win 2 games to get in. If you're 7 or 8, you need to win 1 game to get in. We have the Celtics and Wizards in the East to 7-8, and then the Pacers and the Hornets. In the West, you have the Lakers. You have the Golden State Warriors. You have the Grizzlies, and you have the Spurs. Real quick, we'll get into the individual matchups in the next segment, but Bobby, your thoughts on the play-in?
I just can't wait to see it. These are four compelling matchups. The Pacers, Hornets the least, but I definitely think that this is a good idea in a tournament that should be here to stay.
We'll get into these matchups on the other side. Keep it here. You're listening to Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
All right, I did the same thing I do every week, Bobby. I forgot that first segment of the hour, last 3 minutes, I set us all up to get into the play-in tournament, and then we had to quickly go to break. We are back, though. We are going to discuss the play-in tournament. You want to start in the East or the West? I'll let you pick, since I screwed that up.
I think the East is juicier.
Okay, well, let's save the best for last, then. Let's get into the West, get it out of the way. I will say... Lakers, Wards, and I know that the Warriors aren't the Warriors that they were, but they still have Steph. Lakers, Warriors for a shot to get into the playoffs, that's pretty juicy.
Well, so here's the problem with this matchup, and I hate to be the glass of cold water.
Be a wet blanket. Go ahead. I know what you're going to say.
The Lakers lose. They have another shot to get in, and you can bet the house that they'll beat the Grizzlies or the Spurs to move into the postseason. So for L.A., the only thing that matters is Anthony Davis and LeBron James are healthy. And when it comes to this matchup with the Warriors, everyone loves to romanticize this idea. If Steph gets hot, he could take over and win the game, which is true. But to me, it sounds an awful lot like last year when people said, well, if Dame and CJ get hot,
right. They
could push them and win that first round series and send LA home early. The Rockets with Russell and James Harden, they could win that matchup. And slowly but surely, it started to settle in for people that the Lakers are going to come out of the West, that they are the favorites for a reason, and they're probably going to win that title. And sure enough, they went on to do just that. Now, I'm not saying the same for this season, but they're going to most likely beat the Warriors because Golden State doesn't have enough offense outside of Steph and because of what LeBron James and Anthony Davis are capable of defensively.
Let's put it this way. The Warriors are the 8 seed. And correct me if I'm wrong here. I look at it like this. the Warriors are the 8th seed because they're the 8th seed. They were the 8th best team in the West. They have an elite player like Steph Curry, but the rest of their roster, missing Klay Thompson hurts. I think Draymond Green kind of got, we all saw the real player Draymond Green is this year. They're a good team, but they're the 8th seed. That's about right. The Lakers are the 7th seed because their two best players were hurt for a good chunk of the season. They're not the 7th best team in the West. They're the 2nd, maybe 3rd best team in the West if you really want to be cruel. And now they're healthy. They're back. They are the team that was a wagon for the first half. So, I agree. It's a sexy matchup, like I set up. Lakers, Warriors, two teams everybody talks about. This should be a blowout. It absolutely should. 9-10. I like watching the Grizzlies.
Yep.
It's more than just John Morant. Even though I'm a huge John Morant fan, I saw him in that tournament. I was actually there. That was in Hartford where he went on that run, the college tournament. Amazing player. I really like Jaren Jackson, too. I think Jaren Jackson can play. They're really young. I don't know if they're getting past the Lakers if they get to that point. I think the Warriors could be an interesting game. I don't think it'll happen. I just like to see them make a run. I think they're a cool team, and this is why I like the play-in. Here's a young team that's going to get some playoff experience they wouldn't have otherwise got, and I think that's valuable.
You wanted stakes. They added stakes.
Right.
And it even does apply to the regular season because more teams are relevant now and have a reason to compete and give their fans something to be vested in. And when it comes to the Grizzlies, there's not a bad player on that roster. And so they're going up against the Spurs and the Mystique and everything. And so much of it is Popovich because these are two evenly matched teams. Memphis is better defensively. One side has Ja Morant who can take over a game.
Right.
The other side has DeMar DeRozan who, as disrespected as he is, can take over a game. And then the Spurs have Popovich. And can he be the great difference maker that coaches San Antonio past Memphis? Because in my estimation, the Grizzlies are more talented.
Which one has the better shot to beat Golden State? Assuming
to be the Lakers, you mean?
Well, no, because let's hit the Lakers should win that game.
Because there's not a loser bracket,
right? Well, the Lakers win 7, right?
Yep.
So 9
okay,
or 10,
I see what you're
which
saying.
One, if they advance,
right,
do you think
okay,
has the better shot to beat? No, I asked it in a confusing way. Which one of those two teams do you think has the best shot to beat Golden State and get into the playoffs as, you know, coming from that lower seeded grouping?
Memphis, better defensively with more talent offensively. They don't have enough shooting, but they've got guys capable. And with what John Morant's able to do, especially against a defense like the Warriors, I would think that Memphis has a better shot. But that's a game where it's easier to buy into the idea that Steph Curry goes bonkers and puts them over the
top.
So
here's my question. As somebody who likes to look for these like overly dramatic storylines, and stop me from getting too dramatic here, Could there be a little passing of the torch moment? Steph Curry, Ja Morant, maybe? No, you're shaking your head?
Ja, for him to become one of those guys,
I think he can. I don't know that it happens like next year.
He needs to become a more dangerous shooter. Okay. Right now, so they just played Golden State. Warriors won in San Francisco.
Yep.
And a huge part of why they won is after Ja Morant started doing Ja Morant things and having these acrobatic buckets at the basket, they just backed off him and said, go ahead and beat us with your shot. It was so disrespectful. It was not that different than when Golden State used to do it to Tony Allen in the playoffs.
Right.
And he couldn't buy a bucket.
I'm showing how much I love Ja Morant here. I mean, he's one of my favorite players in the league. How can he not be? He's so fun to watch. He reminds me a little bit. Again, stop me from going too far. You're the NBA guy. I'm saying this as a fan. He reminds me a little bit of like pre-injury Derrick Rose, where when Derrick Rose started going downhill, right? Like I'm talking, you know, the shaved head right out of Memphis in Chicago, MVP Derrick Rose. When Derrick Rose started going downhill, there was nothing you could do to stop him. You could pack the paint with 5 players and you still couldn't stop him. Now, he had a better shot than Ja Morant, but that was the strategy, was just pack the paint and force him to go outside, and slowly but surely, he was starting to develop the jump shot. He never fully got there before he got hurt, and then obviously it becomes a whole other thing, but am I off base with this, that there's a little Derrick Rose there?
I like the comparison, but the difference is that Derrick Rose was so powerful on the ground, and Ja Morant is doing it through the air, where it's not even necessarily dunks. It's his body control
is
like 99th percentile,
yeah,
where he can contort himself in the air to maneuver around much bigger human beings to create that crevice of daylight he needs to be able to score in ways that you don't see from anyone else, whereas Derrick Rose also was kind of unparalleled, but it was those violent shifts from his knees, and it's why it's not a surprise, unfortunately, that he ended up having some serious injuries.
Although he's we'll talk about it when we get to the East. He's kind of bounced back this year.
He absolutely has risen like a phoenix.
So, well, your final thoughts there on Ja, because you were in the middle, so I'm going to cut you off.
Oh, I was just saying that for him to ever be a passing of the torch from Steph Curry type moment, he needs to develop the shot. And maybe it comes this offseason. Who knows?
I mean, we've seen guys do that who get criticized for, I mean,
Jason Kidd's a great example.
Well, I would even say, look at LeBron was a guy who people said couldn't shoot.
For
and
sure.
it came later. And, you know, is he Steph Curry? Is he a 40-45% 3-point shooter? No, but he does it enough where you have to respect it, and it keeps the drive open for him. Like, it wouldn't be the first time a guy has gone from not being able to shoot to being able to shoot.
Yeah, and if John Morant is all of a sudden even respectable from three,
that's what I'm saying. Just get up to like
35% playoff series where he's unstoppable.
Right, and that's what I can't wait for. I want to see that. I want to see him just dominate playoff series. Maybe because, and again, coming from a big John Morant guy, I was a huge Derrick Rose guy. He used to torment my team in the Boston Celtics. He tormented them. That one series.
It was an unbelievable series.
The Brad Miller series, where Brad Miller's throwing guys to the round. Both teams had injuries left and right. Like, I still loved it. He was just an apex competitor, right? He had that mama mentality going.
Won an MVP.
Right. I want to see John Morant do the same thing. So we have 2 minutes left in the segment. I don't want to start the Eastern Conference because we're going to get cut off. So let's talk about the West.
This is an opportunity then. I want to dive back into something you said earlier.
Okay.
Which is define your stance on Draymond Green. I was curious what exactly you meant by that, where it was more like you said, the writing's on the wall, basically, to use my vernacular.
I think Draymond Green is an interesting player because I think he's very good at things that maybe other players, other teams don't put emphasis on, right? If you have a guy who's an elite scorer, you're not really going to put a ton of emphasis on his rebounding. You might not put a ton of emphasis on his defense. Draymond can basically do everything but score, and he brings that physical edge, which I think is huge and understated in the NBA. That being said, I think to justify having a guy like that when you have a salary cap, you need scorers around him. And I think having Steph and Klay Thompson is what made Draymond Green so effective. He could do everything else he was doing without having to be counted on offensively. This year, they asked a lot, and, you know, going back to last year as well, they asked a lot more of him offensively. And I think it kind of showed that he's very good at the things that he does, but his game doesn't expand much beyond the intangibles. And that's where, you know, You can't build a team around Draymond Green. I think Draymond Green is, you're building a team, and he's a great final piece. Dennis Rodman's a guy like that, right? He was an NBA superstar, but you wouldn't build a championship contender. All right, let's get Dennis Rodman and work from there. Like, that's not the kind of player he was. Great player, did a lot of things very well, but, you know, to quote Uncle Drew, the game's about buckets. And he wasn't exactly a bucket getter. I think Draymond kind of fits into that category where he's a good player, useful for a team that wants to win a championship, but I'm not going out and building my team around him. I'm not going out and counting on him to be one of my primary scorers.
Well, so they're both the third best player on a championship team. And have
talking
that,
about Draymond and Rodman.
And Rodman, yeah. And they both have that pedigree, and it's on their resumes, whereas Rodman played in an era where him having almost no talent offensively outside of rebounding was able to still be valuable.
Right.
With Draymond, I totally agree that their big two, if they could have chosen it, it would be Steph and Klay, and they'd be a better team for it.
Right.
Whereas with Draymond, though, what he does provide offensively is facilitating, where he sets that high screen for Steph, the defense traps Curry, and he's now the one who's able to playmake, which teams would love for their big man to be able to do.
Right.
He's one of those guys who's elite at it, not just capable, so he doesn't get buckets, but he does facilitate them.
But again, the more scores you have around him, the better he is with that, so that's where, you know, I think he's only as good as the third
on a championship team.
Right,
for sure.
Exactly.
He can't be two, as we've seen. So I agree with your premise.
Okay, we'll get into the Eastern Conference on the other side because, like Bobby said, that's the juicier one. We'll talk about that. Keep it here. This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. I want to talk about the Eastern Conference play in here, Bobby. You said this one has more juice. Why is that?
So let's start with, well, I mean, I just think that it's less predictable than out west, where you know that the Lakers are going to get the seventh seed outside of Steph Curry, even going beyond what people genuinely mean when they say he can take over a game. And then if the Lakers lose, it's the most climactic storyline, but they're not going to go down twice. So I just think that this one has two more evenly matched games where, on top of it, whoever is the winner of that 9-10 can genuinely beat whoever loses that 7-8 matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's all even teams, certainly. I don't know that any of them are playoff teams, though. I don't know that really, like, for instance, the Lakers, I think, can give one of the top two seeds in the West a run. The Warriors have Steph Curry, so you never know. I don't know that there's a breakout candidate. Like, the tournament itself may be better, but I don't know that one of these teams is going on and advancing past the first round.
Well, I think that's just a product of the Lakers had injuries that put them there.
True.
Like you said earlier, they're not a legitimate, a genuine seventh seed, for instance. They're there because of injuries and bad luck this season. Whereas the Celtics, if Jaylen Brown was healthy, I'm not saying they'd come out of the East or even get to the conference finals, but they would not be an opponent that one of those top three teams would want to face.
So the Celtics felt, I guess the difference between the Celtics and the Lakers, though, and you just kind of hit on it, like, they're not getting their guys back, right? So they're not going to be that. They've also, the Lakers proved they could do it. They proved they were an elite team. The Celtics haven't had a top four record in the East in months.
Yeah, and so when you ask me who can go the furthest from the play-in tournament, we know the answer. Only one of those four on either side of the aisle is a genuine title contender, and I'll still put my money on a healthy Lakers team coming out of the West this year, whereas in the East, it's obviously a different story, but I just think the play-in tournament in a vacuum, the East is a more exciting
okay.
side of the bracket.
I would agree with that. I like some of the how do I phrase this? The potential rivalry matchups, I guess they both apply to the Celtics. I don't know so much about the Wizards, but the Pacers and Celtics they've played a lot of close games this year. And then obviously with the Hornets, you get the Gordon Hayward, the Terry Rozier element of it. So that aspect definitely interests me.
For sure. And then just look at that Celtics-Wizards matchup, because that is the big one here. Washington went 17-6 to end the season. In that time, they led the league in scoring. They had the seventh best defensive rating, which means the amount of points you gave up per 100 possessions. They had a top five net rating, so combined defense and offensive, how many points did you score or allow per 100 possessions? And then the big question is, can Boston stop Bradley Beal without allowing your boy Russell Westbrook to go off and consistently have those openings he needs to explode and get to the rim? He just became, I was telling you before the show, the first player in NBA history to average at least 26 points, 16 assists, and 13 rebounds in a calendar month. But the flip side of it is, now it's postseason time. Not playoff time quite yet.
Right.
But does he become playoff Russ, where all of a sudden he gets frustrated, he's trying to do too much, and it's to the detriment of his own team? So it's going to be really interesting to see how Russell plays, because there's no indication that's coming, but you never know sometimes until it shows up.
So that's the thing here. We talked about last week, Russell Westbrook is a guy who will up the intensity. Who will raise his game to the moment. I don't know how many game sevens he's played in his career. I think it's a couple, but, you know, here you go. Win or go home, essentially. Win and in, and then win or go home for Russell Westbrook. How does he adjust his game to that moment?
Well, the one that stands out to me is against Portland on the road, where he was horrible in that game. And then Paul George had two shoulder injuries that he was dealing with, one on each side. And that's the game where Damian Lillard hit the walk-off and waved goodbye.
Yeah.
So Russell, it was a classic meltdown for him, just like we saw against the Jazz and time again, just like we saw with the Rockets last year in Orlando. So that's the nature of Russell Westbrook in the postseason more consistently over the last few years of his career. And if the Celtics can get that, it might be their best chance of winning the game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a case of that. I think the Wizards, there's a better chance if Boston advances. I think there's a better chance the Wizards lost the game than the Celtics won it. Brad Stevens said something today that was interesting. He said that he was using his time as a college coach, right, and kind of planning for the play-in tournament like it's the NCAA tournament. Well, okay, so you're planning on being in this for multiple games. So you're planning on losing in the first round. Like, that's been my issue with the Celtics all year. There's been this element of complacency, this element of, well, We're the Boston Celtics. We have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. We're one of the best teams in the NBA, so whatever. We'll be fine. And they've kind of just expected things to be taken care of, and they haven't. I don't know about the head coach coming out and saying, yeah, I'm looking at this like the NCAA tournament where you play every other day. I want to hear him say, we're not playing every other day. We want to take care of this on Tuesday and get those days off. Some of our best players are banged up. We want to be healthy. Like, that didn't sit right with me.
So that's the vibe I get from idealistic fans talking with them from the Celtics fan base,
yep.
Where it's that hope that we haven't seen anything to invest in the idea that they're going to click come playoff time. But we know that they have the talent to go on a deep playoff run, and then they lose Jaylen, and that's out the window. Whereas I don't think Stevens is saying, I'm planning on losing this game, you know, maybe from a preparation standpoint, but he's really not involved in that at all. That's other members of the coaching staff and the organization who handle preparation for the Pacers or the Hornets, and it's a grueling time of year for them, especially with the play-in tournament. But anyways, what I see from the Celtics is a team that is exhausted, that was tired going into the season, and that lack of mental toughness where to as large a degree as they show it, they just can't push themselves to the level necessary to win and to have not been in this play-in tournament in the first place. And that's why Washington is a Vegas favorite, despite being the road team, because the Celtics know what they have to do to be at their best, but they can't do it consistently enough. And once they're slowing down offensively and the ball becomes stuck, then they miss shots, and then they're giving up transition buckets, and then the defense gets worse in the half court, and they're providing no pressure or resistance, and it just spirals from them. And against one of the hottest offenses in the league, led by Bradley Beal, second leading scorer in the NBA this season, it's one of those where the game can get away from you, or you can build that big lead that disintegrates, and that's where the Celtics have not been able to show that backbone to bounce back and do anything more than get back into the game against quality competition.
Talk to me about the 9-10. Let's do what we did before. Which of those teams has the best chance against either the 7 or the 8?
I think the Pacers are dead in the water.
Even though the Hornets, and they announced it, they won't have Gordon Hayward at least for the first game.
Yeah, because when you look at a storyline coming to light that players on the team don't like their coach, he's coaching for his job, more often than not, that individual loses their seat. And when you look at the response to that, being someone who's a third string center who's been in the league for a handful of years, and he's telling an assistant coach, I don't care what the relationship is, he tells him to sit the bleep down. That's the response on the heels of all of this being made known to the public. So I think that Bjorkgren is out. I think the players have tuned him out, and I just think they're dealing with too much turmoil. So I get that they are the home team in this matchup. But when you look at the Hornets, even without Gordon Hayward there, this is a united team, a high-energy opponent, and the worst kind of team you want to deal with when you're trying to band together but have kind of packed it in
right. And
are ready to hit Cancun, because almost their entire rotation can shoot the three and make a play off the dribble when you run them off the line. So they are exhausting to guard for one possession, let alone 48 minutes. So I think that they are just going to break Indiana mentally, because the Pacers are ready for this season to be done.
It's funny, the way you describe it, the Pacers are, I think, what a lot of Celtics fans believe the Celtics are. Let's do picks here. 7-8, Lakers, Warriors.
Lakers.
9-10, Grizzlies, Spurs.
I'm going Grizz.
You're going Grizzlies. All right, so that gives us Grizzlies, Warriors.
I'm going with that's the game that Steph Curry wills Golden State to the next round.
All right, so you have chalk. You have chalk in the West. In the East, I think you said the Wizards over the Celtics, 7-8.
And it's for the better for Boston.
It's for the. I would absolutely agree with that. That gives us Celtics and Hornets, the Terry Rozier revenge game. Gordon Hayward maybe makes it back.
Yeah, I think that Hayward plays, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
But I still think the Celtics win that game. They get into the playoffs. I think Philly's the team that they can be more competitive with than Brooklyn, avoid all the storylines. No one cares that Jaylen Brown's not there. They're going to throw it in their face.
I mean, we all know what Philly is in the playoffs.
Brooklyn is the team who was on the losing end of one of the greatest fleeces in sports history, probably the biggest heist in NBA history as far as a trade goes. And now they're on pace to get to the NBA Finals and probably win a title before Boston all of a sudden. So that scenario is going to be thrown out. Whereas if you play Philly and lose, it's really just a role reversal of last season when they didn't have Ben Simmons.
So you have reverse chalk there. You have 8 over 7, then 10 over 9, and then finally 7 over 10. One more segment left on the Diehards. We will be back on the other side. Which league has the best playoffs? We'll answer that question after this. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Final segment of the Diehards tonight. Alex Barth alongside Bobby Krivitsky. All right, so we talked NHL playoffs. We talked NBA playoffs. There's obviously changes with each. The NHL's this year aren't permanent, but they've made changes over the last couple years. They went to the new wild card format. Basketball seems like the play-in tournament's going to stay. We've seen football add a wild card team, eliminate a bye. Baseball's talked about expanding. I, for the longest time, Bobby, thought football had their playoffs down perfectly. I thought winning the division matters, but you don't have to win to get in. I thought the byes were like a nice reward because it made the top teams actually fighting for something, all of that. I don't know if I'd still say the same at this point, but I think format-wise that, you know, 16 per conference playoff is the best one.
Yeah, so with the NFL, I'm with you there. I hate that they've added another team to the mix on each side. And when it comes to comparing who has the better playoffs between the NBA and the NHL, I'll say this. I was singing the praises of the NHL postseason earlier at the start of the show, and I love what they have to offer from a pace of play and the action and all that. But there's a reason that by the time you get to the Stanley Cup, no one's watching, and their ratings are abysmal. The NBA, the beginning, so I think the first round does offer a lot of good matchups, but overall, it's the inverse of what the NHL does, where it gets juicier and more compelling the deeper you go, especially once you get to the finals. And even in those years where you know who it's going to be, as long as they stay healthy before the season's even begun, as anticlimactic as that might be, once you get there, you typically get two heavyweights.
Yeah, you really think that with the NHL? I mean, I think because the Stanley Cup Finals,
the ratings are awful.
I'm not going to go by there. Like, for people who watch everything, for people who watch all four, I think the ratings are bad because it's a regional sport. But I mean, if you're just looking at the four of them, like, just let's just assume even popularity.
So, how enthralled were you last year by Dallas Tampa Bay? How enthralled do you think people on a national level were by Bruins Blues?
I think, but that was a good series, objectively.
Yes.
I don't know that Dallas Tampa Bay
was. But it doesn't appeal to people. It just doesn't register. And that's why people will tell you that they love playoff hockey. They think it's the best of the group, but then they don't really watch it. You know, at most, what they'll do is when someone on Twitter notifies them that, hey, there's a great game coming down to the end here, they'll turn it on. Or like I was saying earlier, for the gamblers, they'll have a reason to watch. But the fan who's not invested financially and their team isn't playing, they don't watch unless it's just the end of the game.
Well, I would say, and maybe that's part of the problem here, and this applies to the NBA too, what the NFL and MLB have is exclusivity, right? Half the league makes it in basketball and hockey. I guess football's trending that way now. Baseball's super exclusive. You only get, what is it, 6 of 30 teams.
Yeah, and what I'll say this. I think that the NFL, they capitalize on, one, the violence, obviously, and two, is the notion that they play, you know, they've done it more and more. You know, it's not just on Sundays anymore. It's more throughout the week, obviously, but still, it's more concentrated.
Yeah.
Whereas the other sports, it's every single night.
Well, I guess
are multiple games.
So the NFL does have that built-in advantage where it's all game sevens, right?
Now all of a sudden you are, and right, it's a 17-game regular season.
Yeah.
And so there's more stakes on the line, and so people are more invested and they're more interested in the national landscape and watching other teams and watching Red Zone. The NBA, they can do a look around, but it's not the same concept as a Red Zone, for instance.
Right.
You know, the NHL, they can do it after every goal, but it's a little excessive. You know, I don't think a package like that would sell nearly as well as Red Zone. So it's just different. And I stand by this notion that the NHL, it's a great product. I still think that it is less appealing than when you get two super teams going at it in the NBA Finals.
Do you watch? I had this conversation with somebody the other day. Do you watch the playoffs for the process or for the result?
Oh, for the process.
See, I think too many people watch the playoffs for the result. And maybe that's where the problem is with the NHL, and that there's so many teams and, you know, everybody has their idea of what they want the championship match to be going in. And I'm not saying this isn't true for other sports, but you're more likely to hit on a championship matchup with less teams. I think a lot of people watch for the result, and all of a sudden that championship matchup they wanted, the result they wanted isn't there, and they kind of tune it out.
See, I don't even think they have this is the championship matchup we want to see, unless you kind of force them to sit down and look at it. Whereas what I think happens is they're not invested. Most hockey fans are regional, and they just care about their right. team. So they'll watch as long as they're in it, and if there's a great game, they'll probably catch some of it. Whereas in the NBA, people might say, like, oh, it's so predictable that these are going to be the two teams, but then when it's the Warriors against the Cavs, or throw out any matchup you want, it's we can't wait to see this now that it's finally here.
Right. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't know. I think regional hockey, the Stanley Cup always does well in Boston, right? Even if the Bruins aren't in it. I think it's more of a regional sport and just there's pockets that are fans. But, you know, that's the one thing that hockey's done very well is there's a certain mystique around their championship. And obviously football has that too with the Super Bowl. But, like, the trophy itself, right? It's one trophy. It's not a different one every year. It's the same trophy every year. And they have, right, the guy with the gloves who carries it around. He brings it out and there's music and there's a whole ceremony around the trophy and all of that. Like, I think they've done a really good job of making their championship series an event. I don't know that, like, for instance, I don't know that the NBA does that.
Do they? Is it? I agree with you. It's the most prestigious trophy.
Right.
But is it such a big spectacle, the Stanley Cup Finals itself?
I think they do the best job. Well, okay, so first off, I think the Stanley Cup Finals are often the best series. Are the best round of the playoffs and that you get the best matchup. In the NBA, I feel like there's normally one conference final series that, like, that's the series of the postseason. I think in football, the conference championship, is often the game. As much as it's the Super Bowl, sometimes it's the conference championship. What was the game of the past NFL playoffs? Was it the Super Bowl? I think it was Bucks Packers, the NFC championship. I think hockey does a really good job, right? I just said the process or the result. I think hockey does a really good job of that process in building that momentum to that, whether or not people follow along, whether or not casuals follow along, and, you know, maybe that's a different question, but I think they do a really good job of building to that process, and more often than not, their championship series, regardless of how many people watch it, is a hit, versus I think in the NBA, you get a lot of blowout finals. Certainly, you get a lot of blowout Super Bowls. Even in the World Series, I think you get a lot of blowouts with that semifinal round, the conference championships. In the other sports, I think generally, if not as much, if not more so, offers the more entertaining game.
So I disagree that you get a lot of blowout finals. I mean, even one of the greatest teams of all time, the 96 Bulls, ended up having their hands full with the Sonics in the NBA Finals, a team that was not as good as them, and you knew who was going to win. It still managed to go six games and be competitive. And so with the NHL Stanley Cup, I do not think that is consistently the best matchup of that postseason tournament, where you look at when it was Sharks-Penguins, for instance, or it was, would you say that Stars-Lightning last year was the best matchup of the whole postseason?
I don't know that it was the best matchup, but we got a really good, entertaining series.
Devils-Kings was not the best matchup that year in the postseason. So I would say the NBA consistently delivers. Sometimes the best two teams are on the same side of the bracket, and that happens.
Right.
Like, you know, that one year when it was Warriors-Rockets.
Right.
And it was whoever wins that is going to win the title, and you know the deal. But still, consistently, what you get are there's a heavyweight on both sides, and it's an exciting matchup as opposed to a blowout.
Interesting. I mean, look, there's no right answer to this, right? We're just kind of spitballing on what happens with the playoffs here. Let's bring in, because I feel like we're not talking about baseball a lot. Did you like as the Bruins go down 3-2? Wonderful. Did you like the expanded baseball playoffs last year when they kind of mirrored the other three?
Yeah, I thought it was a good move. What about you?
See, if baseball's going to have so many games, they really need to keep those regular season games meaningful. And I think having an exclusive playoffs does that. I'd really like, and I know they don't want to, and I know they need the money and they need the extra games. I'd really like to see them keep it exclusive.
So I get that. I basically look at it and say, neither one of us are going to get our wish here, where 162 is too much. It's the sport that demands the most attention from the consumer when it has no right to. It, quite frankly, does the least to extend itself to the consumer. We look at how hard it is to get highlights on social media, for instance.
Right.
It's why people really just care, again, like the NHL, about their team by and large. It's why people don't get to see Mike Trout, beyond just the fact that the Angels don't get to the playoffs his whole career until maybe now. People don't get to see the highlights of this guy. They just know that he's a generational talent, but they don't actually watch him play. It's why people don't get to see Bryce Harper, who's in a major market in Philadelphia, unless he hits a mammoth shot that's able to get onto SportsCenter or Twitter. So I think it's a problem, and that they need to be better marketing the game. And if they were to give in to either one of us, I'd rather it be less than 162 compared to going back to less teams in the playoffs.
Who has a better playoff this year, the NHL or the NBA?
This year, who has a better playoffs between the NHL and the NBA? That's an interesting question. I would have to say that the NBA has a better postseason, especially this year, where typically, like we were saying, it's more predictable and the league is wide open. But there's three teams in the Eastern Conference with a legitimate chance to not only get to the championship, but to hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy in the Sixers, the Brooklyn Nets, and the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Miami Heat, I don't think they have that level of talent, but they can upset at least one of those top three, which is compelling. If the Celtics still had Jaylen Brown, they'd be in that same boat as the Miami Heat from my vantage point. And then you look out west, and I get that people are skeptical about the Utah Jazz, even though they've been able to hold on to the top seed in the tougher conference. They are a legitimate finals contender when you look at how Donovan Mitchell has elevated his play this season to make it more conducive to winning basketball. I know Rudy Gobert is an easy target for jokes, and especially with the screen assists and all that, but they genuinely do add value, and he genuinely has an impact. The reason that I don't think they come out of the West in part relates to him, but it's more that they don't have enough size and toughness when it comes to perimeter defenders. Bogdanovich is a little bit slower. I like Royce O'Neal, but do you really trust him to get the better of LeBron James in a seven-game series? I think everyone agrees the answer is a no. But still, that's a team that has the talent to be a legitimate finals contender and not just the Atlanta Hawks of the Mike Budenholzer era. When you look at the Phoenix Suns, another legitimate contender, even though they're not a blue-blood franchise by any means, but Chris Paul comes there and elevates that squad alongside Devin Booker and the internal growth and building off the momentum of what they did in the bubble last year. They went 8-0 and didn't get to the postseason, let alone the play-in tournament. But still, that is a legitimate squad. For them, it largely comes down to DeAndre Ayton and just how effective he can be defensively, because we all know the teams are going to challenge him and see how quickly he can read and react and process and be able to contain drives off the pick and roll. Can he recover to someone who's popping out after they set a screen? So it's going to be interesting to see what he does. And if he gives them a legitimate big three, then no one's going to want to face Phoenix, or he could prove to be the Achilles heel that ultimately does them in and is why they don't get over the top. Denver is another team where it's so unfortunate that Jamal Murray went down, because I think they were the squad best equipped to give the Los Angeles Lakers the hardest time in a seven-game series. But now they're still a team that no one wants to face. They were in fourth when they lost Jamal Murray, their second-best player. Michael Porter Jr. steps up, and all of a sudden, in Murray's absence, they climb to third in the West, and now they get the Portland Trailblazers, where at one point it looked like it could be Denver in the fourth seed, Lakers in the fifth, and they're one and done. Now I would actually bet on the Nuggets beating the Blazers and getting to the second round. That's probably as far as their ride lasts. And then you look at the Clippers, the fourth seed, who still are healthy to this point, so they are a legitimate title contender, unlike the Nuggets anymore, thanks to that injury to Murray. And so I think Rondo was a huge addition for this team, who checks all the boxes where they needed to be mentally tougher. He brings that. They need a championship pedigree on top of Kawhi Leonard. He adds that dynamic. So does Serge Ibaka, too. He's now getting healthy and finally back. And Rondo's ability to organize that offense. And I think what gets lost in the shuffle is that what made him great with the Lakers, on top of his IQ, was his ability to play off of the likes of LeBron James and act as a conduit, or to make sure that Anthony Davis got the ball and they weren't starting to go several possessions without him touching it, which is one of the problems the Celtics run into when it's Jaylen Brown or even Jason Tatum. As crazy as that sounds to people who don't watch the Celtics, they get the hot hand and all of a sudden they stop getting the ball. Rondo makes sure a situation like that doesn't happen. But of course, whereas the Lakers didn't need him to facilitate and initiate the offense, the Clippers do, and he can handle that role. Last year, I felt they were a point guard away, and to get one who has championship pedigree, who's mentally tough and can get the confidence of that team through difficult situations they're going to have to persevere through in the postseason. It's why I look at them as being the team best equipped to beat a healthy Lakers squad in a seven-game series. And so that's going to be really interesting if they end up meeting up and we finally get the battle of LA, which we were hoping to get last year, and the Clippers melted down like Mickelson at Wingfoot, and so we didn't. And then, of course, you have the purple and gold, who I still think, as much as people love upsets and all that, I think they ultimately come out of the Western Conference. But that right there is four legitimate championship contenders in the West, three in the East. So when do we ever have seven teams legitimately capable of winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy? I think the league's more wide open than it's ever been, and that it's going to make for a great and compelling postseason, especially as we get deeper into it. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll put a bow on the show. Stay with us on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards final segment here. Alex Barth, Bobby Krivitsky, in for Anthony Pepe. Short segment, very complicated topic. I wanted to get it in. Bobby, you see the alien footage?
I did. I watched that 60 Minutes piece.
Are they among us?
Yeah, I've always believed that they're among us. And now what you start to get some information on is they might be more prevalent than we've realized. Like, I saw a piece recently studying, it was air footage of how sharks are much closer in the Pacific Ocean to people swimming out there than we realize. You just can't see. Whereas it's the same deal here, where I think that they have been here far more than we realize.
So I see people like, yeah, the aliens are here. If they're advanced enough to get here, we can't get to them, right? We can't even come close to getting to them. If they can get here, they're so much more advanced than us. They can snap their fingers and we're all gone.
We don't know where they're, what their premise is. That's why it's bad for radio, but my take on the aliens is not to have a take. Let's see what they're all about, because we can't stop it either way.
As Kent Brockman said, I welcome our new alien overlords, but like, let's just kind of keep them at arm's length as long as we can, and we'll see. At least to get through, I want to see who wins these NHL and NBA playoffs. We'll get through that. Another show tomorrow night. Anthony Pepe will be back then. Until then, for Bobby Krivitsky, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.